So it feels like we've arrived after a week. And I'm wondering if there are any questions or anything you want to say. So we'll go to Sangsan, or however it's pronounced, I don't know. Translated by Richard Clark. Sangsan is, they call, the third Zen patriarch. So he was a guy. Yeah. And he wrote or said, I don't know, these verses on faith mind. So I thought we could, if there weren't questions, we could actually go to the beginning and start to read through instead of picking here and there and pick up the verses that we read here and there. So the first line is pretty well known, but I like the way this guy translates it. The great way. Already we could pause, like, what is the great way? So what is the great way?
It reminds me when you say way, when I was little and I went to Sunday school, there was this poster of the easy way and the difficult way.
Say it again, love.
So there was a poster when I went to Sunday school of the easy way and the difficult way. And the easy way was paved with sunshine and people and market, and the difficult ways was like a jungle and a small path. And I think the great way is the difficult way. More adventurous.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Were they recommending?
Yeah, what were they recommending?
I think it was the difficult way.
So, in what way does difficulty make the way great? Or what's the relation between greatness and difficulty? In what ways is the way that feels great to you feel difficult? You, anyone, including Luis.
Well, it reminds me of yesterday's, when Gemma said, laziness. So maybe it's not the difficult way, it's the right word, but the easy way would be the lazy way. Mm-hmm. Difficult way would be the way where we have to work a little bit.
Okay, so what's work? I'm just going to slide over because the moon is right from here. Also, but I can't see her either. No, it's good. It's not your fault, it's the way.
The easy way is maybe the lazy way. And the difficult way may be the way that we have to work a little bit. And then...
And then what's work?
What's work?
Because some people, these days... Mostly laziness comes out as working too much.
Comes out what?
Laziness nowadays often looks like working too much. They've just come to pick up the bathtub. Yeah. Gemma, will, she just shows them which bathtub to take. For the horse's water in the... So what's great work?
You know, I suppose maybe we get a bit mixed up with the kind of work ethic thing, you know?
Yeah.
If it's good, you've got to work hard for it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, after the war in America, or the New Deal,
I think if we could go back even further for the work ethic.
Yeah.
Like to the Garden of Eden, where you're kicked out of the Garden of Eden and therefore you have to work as well.
I didn't follow that theme.
Yeah. So, but it's definitely embedded and intertwined in our...
It depends, no?
So, but it's kind of like... Yeah, exactly. So let's just go to the stick to that question. What is great work? And what is lazy work? What is laziness working and what is greatness working?
When we manage to make hard work really easy.
Mm-hmm.
By keeping it simple.
Mm-hmm. And can you, remembering a time that was happening for you, can you say a little bit more about what that feels like? Something that would look hard or would normally be hard or was hard until a shift happened. Or you were in a flow and something that normally would have been hard was light.
But time is in Lucknow, and I could not meditate for a long time, although I was alone and everything was great and made for this. And there was just no way. And that was making me very upset because I was there for this only.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting worse and worse and just like really upset about it and watching TV and all this, and it got so much that I just gave up and just gave in. And then I could meditate suddenly, just just the simplicity of letting it be.
Buen día. Sí, un momento. Do you mind? Árabe.
So it was hard work to try and meditate, and then suddenly just stopping the trying, it just became...
Yeah. And what's cool in there is that you set up everything in your life around having this long time in Lucknow where it was only for meditation. And then you didn't you can't have access to meditation. And it got worse partly probably because there was because I'm here, there's kind of a bit of pressure because I'm here and it's all about meditation and it's not happening. So then I end up going to TV at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, which in the West doesn't sound that weird, but in Lucknow is, it sounds more extreme. Here is more normal. There, knowing where you were and all, it's more, I get the extremeness. And feeling the frustration building and able to give up trying in that hard work, lazy hard work way, without rupturing, without breaking that, the other kind of determination that was like, I came here for something and it's not happening, but there was some thread, I think, that was still there, that was like what I talked about the other day, what steadies us, that survived the catastrophe and allowed meditation to come. Instead of just turning away, okay, then I leave Lucknow, or going to an extreme in a way that could, you probably felt like you completely lost heart, but somewhere in you underneath, there was this thread of the dedication to the practice.
Yes, and I think the thread was, had been for a while, the trying, and then it just became the accepting, and by the manager. But it really felt like, it really felt like this, and then, but like almost physically.
Mm. Yeah, also physically. Mm. What, Noon, you were going to say something before?
Maybe it's great because it's great fun.
Like, yeah, maybe it's a great way because it's great fun.
It's great fun, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you're with that kind of mind, that it's just fun, no matter what kind of stuff is coming up or whatever, when that's the sort of, what you're holding it with is just great fun. It is great fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that kind of rowing up the creek with a hole in the boat and feeling the difficult life.
But we could have fun even doing that.
Eh?
That could even be fun.
It could be really fun, especially when both paddles brave.
So what would make it fun, rowing up the creek against the current with a hole in the boat?
I don't know, if you just thinking, I believe the brochure that this is supposed to be a beautiful tropical place. And here I am, and it's not what I
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's the greatness of it being beyond our projection, our imagination. And there's maybe the great... Oh, go ahead. You're about to...
Yeah, I was just thinking that maybe with the path as well, it's the easy whilst open and all in view. The difficult path is not in view. It's not the expectations come.
Your practice is to speak more loudly today. And kind of to project behind you.
the easy path and maybe the rowing boat, when there's an expectation of and it's in view and you know what to expect, there's laziness in it. The difficult path, or the boat with the hole in it, you don't know what's coming next, and that's maybe the hard part of it.
Right. Good. And the great part. So this is a very clear point that's come now. It's like to feel how, and it's cool because Virginie's example makes it a very precise point as well. Like bringing together all of what you three have said, I think it makes a very complete and precise point. That one thing that's great about it and also fun and funny about it is that it's not what we project it to be. So I projected myself, an image of myself in Lucknow meditating deeply for several months or whatever it was, a year or I don't know how long it was. And even though that is eventually what happened, it wasn't me doing it my way in the way I'd imagined it. It wasn't my plan working out. It was something deeper, like a secret, deep wish that sparked that imagination of that. But then it could also happen despite my imagination of it. But the wearing away of the frustration, wearing away the imagination of it. can't meditate. So not being able to see what's coming. So, but with the boat going up, with the hole, going upstream, rowing upstream, and the oars break into the hole in the boat, it's again what I said the other day, like sometimes it's easier to see the beauty in the stump than to see the beauty in the flower or the cliffs or whatever. So sometimes when the boat breaks, and we can actually, it dawns on us that we actually don't need the boat or whatever. And then it's funny and fun and everything. But what about when we're going downstream and it's so easy and it seems to match our imagination? Sometimes it's harder to stay like really close to what steadies us, which is remembering that I don't know what's coming. Even if what's coming matches what I expected or seems to. And sometimes when it matches, it's because I'm selectively perceiving what's happening many times. And sometimes it's quite a match, you know. But what we imagined and what's the difference between imagination and happening, that gap, like keeping clear what is imagination and what does that feel like and what is the secret wish operating where it's not in my hands. and the boat may or may not break, but it's not because of my merit that the boat doesn't break or something. So that's one really good, clear point about what could be great in life. And what about the way? We've talked a little bit about the way part, the great way. Great way. We'll get back to the end. That'll be the most important. Yeah, only 2 pages. I'll get the computer to count how many words. You'll have to stay several years to get through it.
Yeah, because the implies there's only one.
Mm-hmm. The great way, yes. But the, well, it must, it's the first word. We'll get back to it at the end. The first shall be last. So the great way. Anything come to mind about that?
Feels like a way of seeing the way. Could be the undoing of what makes us now,
mm-hmm.
but in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really a way as much as a stop, a way of.
I got lost in between there.
Instead of a way,
mm-hmm.
somehow it doesn't go anywhere, but
mm-hmm.
right in the same moment
mm-hmm.
and in every
mm-hmm.
moment,
mm-hmm.
it's a stopping of everything that makes a way. And
right.
Just
cool. So the timelessness factor, kind of. That it, if we think of way, it's easy to think of the path, whether it's in the jungle or it's on a road in the sun. There, it has a beginning and an end, or at least there's a stretch. Some might not have a beginning or end, but it has time.
Yeah. So
and what you're saying is like it is as a dissolving of time, really, or as a dissolving of the perception that I go from A to B, or to the the dissolving of refuge in the greatness of my way also, or how I'm going to meditate and that's so good. Or.
Yeah, or even of what makes me at this very moment. So the instantaneity
yes.
of the being this
yeah.
or that
yeah.
or some whatever else. And dissolving that very instantaneity of it and coming back to
not two, not one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you'd
rather say the dissolving of the me-ness, kind of, rather than time.
Yeah, I was more meaning this, but
yeah.
in the very instant. So again and
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
But not really again and again, because
yeah.
now,
mm-hmm.
always.
Yeah.
We call it the great movement.
You would call it the great movement.
Mm.
Okay. So did you finish?
Yeah.
So why movement?
Well, you know, you said that it's not from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
And
are you remembering that you speak behind you?
I feel I'm really loud.
Okay. It's not very loud, but it seems to be loud enough.
Okay. There's no A to B, so, and a movement also implies there's something going on, not an A to B, and there's no self to it either.
Mm-hmm.
Or being on the way, you are on the way, but with a movement, it's a happening.
Cool. So great movement in the sense of not movement in the way we usually think of,
mm.
but still movement.
Mm.
And so, like turning movement inside out, which it makes me think of one of those stories that I love so much that I tell often of Jacques Lucifer. Have you heard this? How many times have you heard it? We have the book here in French and in English. the brief part of the story of this man who lived in the 20th century in France when he was a boy. And he loved light, and then he lost sight. There was an accident at school, and he lost the use of his eyes. And after, I think, only a few weeks, he was in a park with his father, unable to see because his eyes didn't work, near a tree that he really loved and had loved to see. And this is reminds me of Virginie's, the crisis in Lucknow, where she'd gone to meditate for months and couldn't meditate. So he loved to see, and he couldn't see, and he was 8 years old. And there was this tree, and he just so really wanted to see the tree that something happened inside, like a great movement, turning movement inside out. So, or we could say turning seeing inside out in this case, the movement of seeing. I hope it's not too confusing to interrupt myself here, but I think this is a good example of what we're talking about, like when it's easy for us, sometimes it's not helpful, it's harder. So it's easy for us to see, our eyes work. And so in a way, we're lazy seers, we're lazy lookers. And we think we see the tree because we see in the way that we've learned, which is going out. And since he could not go out, and he could not go out, and he could not go out, or he could go out and he couldn't see, so that he couldn't go out anymore, which is maybe that's the beginning of the great movement, is we can go out and we can say, I've got to meditate, I've got to meditate, I've got to meditate, and nothing happens. It's not in our hands. We can't control it. It doesn't work. So finally, we can't go out anymore. And some shift, the great shift happens, or the great movement, let's say, happens then. And so the energy that would have gone out to see the tree, he describes as going from a place already within to a place further within. And then he could see the tree. And the cool thing about the story is that it's not even like some magical trick, because he could actually see that tree. It wasn't like he was in some celestial realm where he could tune into tree-ness or something, but he was in touch with that actual tree, and he had an image of it that was a living image also, that was not just like he got a glimpse and now he can hold on to that poster of the tree or something, but it was a living image, just like we have, not just like, but in that way that we have, that we could look from this side and that side. Or and so how close greatness or magic is, looking from a place within to a place further within, and then even what seemed to be without is included, is seen. And he talks about it as an experience of light that flows, a flowing light. And he could play with the light, and sometimes the light had color that had to do with him. So when he was in love with a girl when he was a bit older, then her light, or maybe it might have even been that summer, but I imagine it was when he was a bit older, she was more red. The way he saw her was more reddish, and later he realized it had to do with kind of attraction, sort of sexual energy or whatever. And then the access to the seeing didn't happen when he got caught up in the frustration, for example, like, oh, I can't get the key into the lock or whatever, or bumping into the table and getting frustrated about it, instead of just, as Virginie used the word, simplify, like when it's just simply a bump into the table and not as if the world's against me. When the world's against us, we don't see. Usually because our habit would be to try to be going out again, even though we see it's not working. And then to go out more strongly to try to make it work until again we... So the kind of training could be, we could train our mind to go from in to more in sooner, instead of having it be such a hard, only hardness for hardness' sake. That's why we question this, like, great and difficult is not just equal. There's a certain kind of difficulty of letting go of the habit of going out as the way to get the thing, got the tree. Or even as the genuine way of remembering the love of the tree, or inspiring the love of the tree, or the love of meditation. And this is a very subtle movement, but I also want to say we've all experienced it. So it's more like having the openness in of our mind to be receptive to feel what were those gestures or happenings, shifts, where we went from in to farther in, or something shifted from in to farther in, something connected from within to farther in, and included, and then included out. And he especially mentions when he wants to be first at a game. So I love that image for so many reasons, and one of them is that he was a blind kid playing with all the other kids, playing whatever game. And he could want to, he could dare to want to be first, despite not seeing. And even so, like, even if we are truly some kind of victim of circumstance or whatever, we can't see and they can see, and let me be first, you know, like, come on, I deserve it. Even then, like, the wanting to be first blocked his seeing. So when we have our excuses for why we want to be first, why we give in to the movement to be first, that would justify why I should be first, we could feel how it blocks our, the great way, the great movement, whatever. The great way is not difficult. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. So this is a famous line, and I like this translation because the way he says not attached to preferences instead of for those with no preferences, which is a more common translation. Because most of us, I would say, we have preferences. And so then we're already outside from the very first line. We're out, out of the game. But not attached to preferences can see, like, okay, there are preferences. Like, we might as well admit, confess, there are preferences. And there's attachment to preferences, too. And yet, therefore, there's something to work with that is difficult. And we know that it's not difficult when that attachment is low or hard to find at all or gone. And so we can learn this kind of inspiration to be moved towards those times, those actual experiences when the attachment to our preferences was low. Not like it was low, it was not high volume. It was not high pressure, it was not heavy, it was low volume, low pressure. Instead of believing that's in the self-righteous kind of way, maybe, in a kind of victim way, like, instead of believing in our preferences and that we deserve or that we should or, and that as if getting what we prefer is a reward of any of like of any lasting value. And also it goes hand in hand with knowing and seeing that sometimes what we prefer happens and it's nice. It has a niceness to it. But it does happen. And so it's not just like renouncing and going against our preferences and doing the opposite. But how nice is it when I have a preference and it lands in my lap? And the difference between that and when I have a preference and I'm elbowing everyone out of the way, which means I'm disconnected from what's most important to me because I want to be first. Whatever. But so again, the title of this piece is Verses on Faith Mind, which I prefer to think of like as a trust song or something like that, trust poem. Is the trust that the preferences happened to me. I don't need to defend them so much as being what I'm about. Those preferences happen to me by the circumstances and conditioning. They're not exactly mine, but they did happen. And sometimes it will be helpful and even sometimes skillful when there's a preference, like say for potatoes or something, or for chocolate or whatever. It happened to us. Like if we lived in another culture, it wouldn't be that. It would be something else. It would be yams or grubs or whatever.
And still the chocolate.
What?
And still the chocolate.
Okay. Grubs, chocolate covered grubs. It still can be a value on the path sometimes to know when it's needed to have that kind of echo into the childhood sense of safety or well-being to have the potatoes or the chocolate or the whatever. Or if there wasn't well-being in the childhood, then whenever you managed to create that and it got associated with coffee or it got associated with sunshine or rain or whatever, like sometimes we need to go sort of like forth, like the snake, and have it with trust that it can be skillful when the volume of the rawness in what is difficult in the great way, when that volume is so high and there needs to be some rest. And what can give the rest, what can trigger the rest is that those kind of signals through our conditioning. But basically what I want a juicy thing to play with is when something that we like happens, and the different quality than when something that we like is forced to happen, like we make it happen. Even if like we earn it, like rightly, the difference between the feeling that I'm earning this rightly and the feeling when it lands on you. It's a little bit like when you're long enough anywhere around here, basically. If you're long enough still somewhere, there'll be creatures coming. And so the feeling like when a butterfly would land on you or a lizard would come near you or something, that feeling can give a sense of of trust mind. Where it's like a mutual trust, a mutual dance of trust between us and life, life and us. That kind of feeling that life trusts you with this lizard or this butterfly or this chocolate or whatever. And then still letting it be like that there's no one home, but that we still on some level start to trust ourselves more. And we can more quickly jump up when there's an inspiration, or stay down when that's the inspiration, and less questioning. Okay, now the next line, don't take too seriously, or don't let it enter the wrong way. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. So we've talked about this in one example with Virginie's experience in Lucknow, where there was love and hate arising. Like she loved the idea of, how many months was it that you were planning?
It was indefinite. I was just staying over the summer, and that was alone during that time.
Right. So the summer in Lucknow, for her to be alone and meditate, do a self retreat basically, but without even calling it that. Probably not needing to even call it a self-retreat, but having the summer alone to meditate. There was love of that idea, and there was hatred of it not happening. It's another way to put it. And so all was not clear, and all was disguised. And yet, in the very situation, because of that thread of something deep in herself that was dedicated to the real meditation, to the real way, it became all was clear and undisguised. So I think that Virginie's example helps us take that line in a better way. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. It doesn't mean when love and or hate are arising. Let's just say probably when there's love arising, there's hate arising. So attachment aversion. aversion, attachment. I think it's, they go always together. I love the idea of meditating. I hate the idea of not being able to meditate. We could just notice that when the attachment aversion is going on, all is not clear and undisguised. All is clear. All is unclear and disguised. We could notice that. We're not able to think clearly and act clearly, and we don't feel firmly the gentleness and the love. And maybe by not getting into a second fight where I hate that love and hate are arising, and I love the idea of not having love and hate arise. And I love the idea of being clear and all being undisguised. Less and less adding those layers of preference. Less empowering them actively. I think it's easier that we're falling, the whole thing's falling apart sooner. So when neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. I said it wrong, actually. Separate, not separate. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth.
Is that separate from love and hate?
Separate from what I think the two together? Okay. The great way is not difficult for those who are not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate, or separate, I'm not sure now, by the smallest amount, but I think he's saying separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. So he's not saying actually, but I think what he means is it is the great way. Separate by the smallest amount through the preference, through wanting to be first, through taking that the world is against me. Separate by the smallest amount and we can't see from inside anymore. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from the great way as heaven is far from earth. Which I think this is a sneaky little line. Because how far is heaven from earth?
Just that
small. It's not small. It's not apart. Where is there any separation between earth and sky?
It's
completely in our mind.
Is that just that little...
Yeah. There's no separation between earth and... I mean...
Yeah. We're in the sky.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's meant... Maybe at that time they had a very clear sense of that sky starts above the emperor's temple or something like that. I don't know. But to me it's interesting. And also interesting in terms of the Jinshin horizons of heaven, earth, and human. So it's almost like when we mistake what the human being is, if we think that the human being is about having the preference and being first and taking the world against me, then earth is way down, way far away from heaven is way up there. And if we're a human being without defining, if we're in the actual human realm where we belong, which is with trust, then I don't see how there's any separation. And that's exactly what the human realm is about in Jinshin. It's exactly having the two
bring them together
as not two, not one. So I don't know if it's a sneaky little line on purpose or if we can just take it that way now. But I think the example of Jacques Lucieron is very helpful too, because one of the things I really love about his experience is that he himself says, like, what would be the reason, what would be the need? There's no need for any moral code of, like, don't try to be first, you're being a bad boy. Because, like, he as soon as he wants to be first, he can't see. He can't go from, I'm imagining them playing cricket because I spent so much time in India. I have no idea what they were playing. But let's say they're racing. You're in the middle of a race and you can't see. You have to stop. You can't. There's no way you could even consider the idea of first or last, because you have to just stop running or you're going to fall down. And this is also, maybe you already were first, but you don't know. And this, because it's so, like, blankly impersonal and not moralistic or ethical or anything, it's just functional. It's just like the mechanics of it. And this is how I think it is for us, but then we end up taking it as so personal. Like, oh, I'm wrong that I feel disconnected or whatever. But it just doesn't work not to be the human being that is already both. So to put it a little bit in a more challenging line is, it doesn't work to be attached to preferences as much as we like them. Are there any questions?
I sort of had something to say.
Yeah, please.
Because I find this poem really speaks to an experience that I had last night, where I had a sort of, I told you a bit about my experience, and I guess an experience that I preferred to my...
So, if you don't mind, just say a line for them to know what you mean about your experience.
Oh,
if it's
just
okay.
What it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was really just a kind of a meditative insight, I guess, into my place in the world and into what meditation means to me, which was, like, I kind of found some love for meditation last night.
Say just a line, another line, because still we don't know what happened.
Yes, it was a good time.
I know it's not easy to put into words, but...
Yeah, for sure. I think if I generally, my day-to-day life, sort of see myself in a certain way...
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe last night I saw a more clear perspective of where my life is going.
So when you usually see yourself in a certain way, what's involved in that certain way? There's a certain amount of...
Yeah, well, there's...
Of what, and what.
Yeah, and things that I like about myself and things that I don't like and all these things. And
so it's like, there's a certain amount of judgment.
Yes.
Involved in the perception of you.
Yeah.
Normally.
Normally.
Yeah.
Day-to-day life. Which is sort of, I kind of just live with that, I think.
Yeah.
And then maybe that was gone a little bit, and a sense of sort of wonder about the world was there. It was less sort of gray. And of course, I really preferred that experience to my day-to-day experience.
So let's just back still into the line of what happened. There was not that certain amount, maybe less or none of the... normal judgment,
mm-hmm.
and there was a certain amount of what, and there was wonder about the world,
wonder,
and there was
yeah.
also a change in the perception of you.
Yes.
And there was a certain amount of wonder, and blank. What?
Okay.
What went along with wonder?
Probably love for myself.
Yeah.
Self-love.
Yeah.
Which I probably don't have as much as I would like in my day-to-day life. And optimism about me on this path that I think it is a very worthwhile thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I would love to feel like that all the time, of course. would
yeah.
be the best. But of course.
And sorry, I'm still sticking to the line. What did that certain amount of self-love feel like?
Mm.
Three adjectives.
Well, it felt more still, I think, than my usual sort of running around.
Yep.
Activity, like less activity, more just stillness, and maybe a kind of. Like presence, maybe? Like a,
a
presence with myself and with other people that I was talking to, too. Like really
not hiding.
Yes, for sure. That was definitely part of it. Yeah, like a courage to be myself, maybe, and not hide.
Yeah.
And a clarity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
when neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's, and it shows the not one, not two thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for letting me grill you. The stillness is that, like, preferences, yeah, but that's not life. That's not the most important thing. Fine. Presence, not two, not one, like, and not, there's like the emptiness, but not making something out of emptiness. There's, so stillness gives the feeling of the emptiness. Presence is like, but not only emptiness, not two, not one, not none, not something, not nothing. and you're saying courage, it's also this, he's saying faith mind or trust mind. And what was the third one again?
Clarity.
Clarity, yeah. It's easy then, when there's not the extra movements. And I think that all of that in a, like, a surrounding, the surrounding world was like the wonder. I think that's like the,
yeah,
the soup or the pot for the soup or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or that those three qualities are, somehow go along with wonder. So it's really good, beautiful description. Okay. So you wish that was still happening,
yeah,
in your conscious experience.
Sorry. Yeah, but I mean, of course, I woke up and went, did a meditation and did the karma yoga and stuff, and felt myself sort of returning to, I guess, a reality that I am more familiar with.
Right. Don't call it reality.
Okay.
State, mind state.
Yeah, state.
Perception,
okay.
View.
Yeah. Yeah, like a, like maybe a sense of who I am that's more familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, hearing this, feel that it, the preferences can really help me out right now, because I think that experience was great, but it's, part of me really wants to just, like, meditate the entire day today and
mm-hmm.
try to get back to where that was.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe also there's something to learn from this sort of more familiar space that I'm in right now, that if the preference isn't too strong, I can probably learn from both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Also, but also, like with Virginie's experience of really, really wanting to meditate, not being able to, and then that whole construction of should meditate, can't meditate, frustration, as it finally could fall apart, and then meditation could happen.
Mm.
So it's not to construct too much on top of is good, on top of the experience of that state and this state. But also, like we spoke last night, to let that state, like, really reach into all your cells, to sleep on it, digest it, like really let it come in and or out or whatever. So that the calling towards that, which would, we said called the thread before, so that the thread can keep showing up, whether the preferences are strong, whether the state of judgment view is strong or not. So it's like, not to make too much of, like, okay, the opposite of sour grapes. Since I can't have what I want, I'll make what I have a reason to be worth having. And just, like, not to touch the story, just, okay, this is what's happening now. I didn't particularly manipulate that experience last night to happen. It happened. Thank whoever or whatever or whatever, nobody or this is what's happening now. Maybe there's not a problem here, but let me not make it into like something I'm going to learn from equally from the, like, not to make a map of it, yeah. is I think a deeper way of letting down the preferences, so that it's easier for the thread of what if we call it, even call it attachment, but some other kind of deep attachment or great attachment or something. Let's call it great attachment. Our love for the love or the wonder, so that that has room to move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Please. Okay. So let's have a minute or so of quiet. And